Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Kleinfeld with Stonewall Live, the best of film and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. So this Jewish guy is sitting at the games, me, doing some work, practicing my karate. I was at the Gay Games 9 this August in Cleveland. When a young man walks up to me and starts talking in the middle of this plaza. And I said, he's an author, he is an actor, he's a writer, and it's Joe LeBlanc. He has written a book, Finding My Place, One Man's Journey from Cleveland to Boston and Beyond. He also has performed a one-man play called One Man's Journey Through the Middle Ages, which is a performance based on his work. Welcome, Judah. Hello.
Well, thanks very much. I'm thrilled to be with you.
Thanks, Judah. Besides meeting me in the middle, in the middle of a beautiful plaza in Cleveland, how did you come to this place in your life where you have laid open your life with this book and performance piece? How did you get here?
Well, it was a long time coming. I'm in my 50s, and I'd always had some interest in writing and acting. Was in a couple plays in high school. I guess I always was interested in different, had different creative outlets. I took some improv classes when I was in my 30s, but I never really found my medium until around the time I turned 40, I was going through a lot of changes, and I started writing a little more seriously, and eventually started writing a column for the local newspaper in the suburb of Boston where I was living, called Somerville. Mm-hmm. And then eventually that ended, and I got a gig working. This is a sideline because I have a day job, but I started writing for Bay Windows, which is Boston's gay paper.
Oh,
and I write a column called Life in the Slow Lane. So it's, a little bit about being middle-aged and kind of not in the scene.
Uh-huh.
And around the same time, I had slowly been working on putting a number of pieces together and doing kind of a loose, what I call an episodic memoir, slices of my life. Some of them had been in the newspaper. And some of the book was about growing up in Cleveland in the 60s and 70s and kind of coming from this place that was kind of like an underdog, kind of a mm-hmm. place that was a little bit downtrodden, but that
right.
I'm still very connected to. And then, kind of writing about my other tribes, about my Jewish connection. Mm-hmm. And then the second part of the book is more about my life in middle age and as a single gay man and kind of trying to find my place. So I think that that sense of place, both kind of external, as in, city I came from, and more internal, as an adult trying to figure out where do I fit, in this world, in the gay subculture, in Boston, in my life,
right.
Kind of putting those pieces together. I think those are the themes that kind of run through the book. And there's also a lot of humor, particularly in the second part of the book.
Oh,
and
I think the first part's fun,
second.
Too. Oh, I think you're hilarious when you describe your family. I think the first part of the book is funny, too. Describing your family is hilarious. But, of course, to other people, your family is funny. You're afraid. Everyone's ashamed of their own family. But your family is pretty funny. So that you'll have to get
right.
the point.
Well, right. I mean, I can look back and, there definitely was some humorous stuff going on and or it's humorous in retrospect. It wasn't always so funny at the time.
Exactly.
But, our families give us lots of material. There's a quote that I'm paraphrasing by Flannery O'Connor, the Southern writer, who basically said, anybody who survived childhood has enough stories to last a lifetime.
Yeah,
so,
got that right.
The second part of the book is more about my life in middle age. And then for the second
uh-huh.
edition, which came out last year, I added a third section, which is actually basically my show. And that is
okay.
snapshots from my life, basically, from like 40 to 55. kind of looking for love in all the wrong places, and, you know, just dealing with times when the Jewish expression is man planned and God laughed, that kind of thing.
Yes, right. That's a Talmud thing. Let me go ahead and plug for the book right now. The name of the book is Finding Place, One Man's Journey from Cleveland to Boston and Beyond. You are looking for the second edition. It is available in Kindle on Amazon.com. Of course, look up Judah LeBlanc, JudahLeBlanc on Amazon. If you go to his website, JudahLeBlanc.com, spelled, if you're watching, you're seeing this on your screen, JudahLeBlanc.com, and you can order directly there under book. So we did that. We're good, okay? Anyone want to call in? Call-in number tonight is 855-830-8355 and press 1 to get in the queue, and we'll get you on the air. Okay, let's go back to Cleveland. I'd never been to Cleveland.
Okay.
When I told my friends I was going to spend 8 days in Cleveland with 9,000 athletes, 35,000 spectators, which is what the Gay Games did this year, they all laughed. They said, of course, the mistake by the lake, the mistake on the lake, which, of course, you quote as too. I was very, very impressed, very pleasantly surprised. Of course, my expectations had been low, but it was a wonderful experience for me. I loved the city. It was beautiful. We had beautiful weather. Everyone treated me nicely.
Right.
It was gorgeous. Compared to a lot of other cities, Cleveland really put its best forward. But the Cleveland that you describe in the first couple of three chapters of the book kind of is a character in and of itself. And when I'm reading it, and then I've read, you know, read the whole book and came back and said, oh, wait a minute, you're Cleveland. You know, how much of Cleveland is you? I mean, the way you write about it, kind of coming out of ash, ups and downs. You know, do other people notice that, or is that just queer me?
Yeah, I think my friends here, you know, that's why I'm, you know, I've done several readings in Cleveland and you know, sold some books there, but I'd like to do more there because I think people understand some of the humor and like the, you know, year in and year out following the teams like the Cleveland Browns that just generally will like break your heart. And, but they're really consistent in losing frequently. But they give you this hope that they're going to turn it around and then they like let you down. It's kind of like the bad boyfriend. So, I think that my friends here in Boston, you know, who know me well, I think they kind of understand because I've written and talked about it a lot, this kind of identification with the place that I come from. And, you know, I don't think I fully appreciated it until I left for 10 or 15 years. I mean, I think the city, what I saw this summer, the city is on somewhat of an upswing after many years of kind of going in the wrong direction. And it was really neat for me to come back and kind of see that with the eyes of a tourist and see other people experiencing the city and going like, wow, you know, this is totally not what I expected. But yes, when I was growing up there, I mean, the river caught fire and we had, you know, race riots and there was a lot of pollution. And it was, you know, the city was a butt of jokes. And yet, I think people there have a sense of loyalty and a sense of connection. It's kind of, it's like I could draw some parallels between being gay and being Jewish. Clevelanders, it's like another tribe. And I kind of feel like I have membership, even though I've been away, you know, I get back there enough. And my writing kind of, it's very, like you say, you know, kind of place-based. So even people who've never been to Cleveland, I think if they read the book, you know, they'll kind of get a sense of the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I mean, I think I carry the city in my gut in a certain way. It's like the homeland, you know?
Yeah, Right. It seems like it comes back, almost like the early Jewish writers were always writing about the shtetl, even though they lived in New York. You know, they were still in Poland or wherever, or Russia or wherever, Lithuania. But for someone like me who had, I'm in Fort Lauderdale tonight. I live in the gay ghetto. I go several days sometimes without seeing a straight person. I'm admitting all of this out front. So I think nice evening is going to South Beach. So me saying that Cleveland is cool and I would like to go back there is a big thing. They did an amazing job. For anyone who laughed at me, I brought pictures back and proved to them that it really really was beautiful. You have one of the most beautiful art museums in the world. I was incredibly impressed. The volunteers.
Yeah, the museums. The cultural. You know, I'm not a big classical music aficionado, but most people know the Cleveland Orchestra. There's a lot of really good cultural resources because, you know, at one time Cleveland was one of the wealthiest cities in the country. That's where John D. Rockefeller started, and there's still a lot of like old money there. Some of it has gone to Florida, as a matter of fact.
A lot of it has. And let me just tell people who why the gay games were in Cleveland. A lot of people ask that question, and so I researched it, and I will share that with you. If any of the listeners have ever been to a very large gay event, they see things like Bank of America, Wells Fargo as the presenting sponsor, or Morgan Stanley, or if you go to a gay social event, it's always a liquor, beer, you know, Coors or Light or a vodka company. This was unusual in that the Cleveland Foundation, which is a predominantly straight cultural organization, which is incredibly well funded from the wealth of the city. It was the sixth largest city in the United States at one point. It has the second largest number of active theater in the United States at one point. So next to New York. So they have a big Cleveland Foundation was presenting sponsor, almost unheard of for a international gay event. A straight cultural organization put up the money, and they put a big chunk of money to bring the games to Cleveland. So kudos to all those people. Well, I was, as I said, for me, you know, hearing about Mistake on the Lake and the employment and the crime and the corruption. I mean, Cleveland had an incredible corruption, which you do touch on, but you know, it's kind of like it does parallel your life, which I found interesting that you have found a vehicle, and your vehicle is Cleveland. You know, kind of comes back and forth. All right, let me talk about your live performance. If you go to judahleblanc.com, there are some links to part of the performances on YouTube. Click so you can get to that. I also mentioned motion that I've been doing to my listeners and my Facebook and my Twitter, blog, and whatever else I do. Tell me how the performance got started.
Well, you know, I've always enjoyed doing readings, and I think that, and I've done a fair amount of radio. I've had a bunch of pieces on public radio around the country, so it's kind of natural for me to take it to the next level. As a, you know, I thought of myself more as a writer than an actor, so. That was a big edge for me the first time I did the show, which was about 3 years ago. I did it. So the first time I did the show was in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I did it at this adult education center in Harvard Square. And it's basically, it was in a kind of a small theater space. And it's, you know, seated about 70 people, and it sold out. And I realized the week before the show that, you know, the first performance that, oh my God, you know, these people are coming. They bought tickets. I'm committed. And it was scary because I really didn't, even though I was familiar with these pieces because I wrote them, you know, I really I wasn't sure that I could really retain an hour's worth of material and, you know, entertain people and let go of the safety of the script in terms of having the words in front of me. But I found that once I got on stage, because I had been rehearsing for about 4 months, it just kind of, it just flowed, and I really enjoyed it. And so since then, mm-hmm. I've done the show probably about 15 times in a number mm-hmm. of cities, including Toronto, Tampa,
wow.
several times in Boston, Cleveland. I did it at a couple fringe festivals in Buffalo and Rochester, New York. I did mm-hmm. it at the Lesbian and Gay Archives in Toronto, the Canadian Lesbian mm-hmm. and Gay Archive,
right.
and also
no.
at the Gay and Lesbian Center in New York. And,
uh-huh.
yeah, I just found that it was a natural thing for me. And you know, it's kind of neat as a writer to, by doing the show, you know, I get immediate feedback, which
right.
I don't get.
Right.
You know, if somebody's reading my book, they might email me, which is nice.
Right.
But
right.
to have people in the room and feel like I'm communicating with them in real time is
uh-huh.
really cool.
We have a caller.
So,
in a minute. Hold on.
Great.
Let's see. Hey, 954. Hello. This is Clarkson. How are you?
Hello. Am I
Who
on?
Who is this? You are on. You are so on.
Oh, great. My name is Mark, and I actually just found you. This is the first time I've ever listened to a blog talk radio program, and it's really exciting. Nate, it's Mark Eagle. How are you?
Oh, hi, Mark. How are you doing? Good. Good to hear you.
I'm good. This is very exciting. I was listening. I just tuned in about 5 minutes ago, and I heard you talking about experiences in different cities and you know, how you relate to them and all of that. And I've lived in many different cities, but I went to college in Buffalo, New York, and I had a similar
right.
experience where I left for 30 years, and I just went back a couple of years ago after 26 years. And I was really excited to see the changes and how it's progressed and all of that. And the cohesiveness that you brought up, your guest brought up, you know, I've lived in several cities, and I felt like, for example, Atlanta, I lived in for 3 years. And it was a nice city, but I didn't feel that kind of cohesiveness, you know, and between neighborhoods and all of that I felt in places like Buffalo and even to a certain extent down here. But I'm enjoying the program, and I just wanted
thank
to
you.
Let you know that there are people out there listening, and
oh,
I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Does it feel good? Does that
yeah,
feel
thank,
good?
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Great. I'm going to continue to listen. Thank you.
Okay,
good
great.
Night.
Thank
cool.
you, Mark. Good night. That's cool. All right, listen. So when he was talking with Atlanta, you know, it maybe you have to have, like, a bad experience to have fun in a city, you know?
Right.
Maybe you have to go. Atlanta never had that. Right? I mean, really, I mean, Atlanta's
well,
on the
I mean, I think
it's a civil
I
war.
I just think some of the Sun Belt or the newer cities, I mean, they, you know, they have their advantages, but there is something right. to be said, I think, for the old, you know, older cities where,
sure,
I don't know,
sure.
it's just, people are more, maybe more, a little more embedded in the place. So I've actually,
right.
you know, I did the Fringe Festival in Buffalo, as I mentioned,
right.
and I found that the people there, very similar to Cleveland, they have even the same Great Lakes accent, which
yes,
I
they do.
Think I had, you know, growing
oh,
up.
Do.
But then when I
do
was going
it.
Around Buffalo, I could hear it. So,
yeah.
yeah, I could very much relate to what Mark was talking about.
Right, right. And Mark's a friend of mine from down here. Anyway, interesting, again, is you have you talk about mechanics of writing this book. Your book is self-published, that's correct? Or is it published?
Yeah, it was not my original plan to do so, but it's kind of the way
right.
things worked out, is that some of the pieces were, you know, broadcast on public radio, or they were
right.
they were published in the newspaper or this magazine in Cleveland called Northern Ohio
right.
Live, which unfortunately is
right.
no longer, has gone out of business. But then I basically wove it together, hired,
huh.
had an editor and a designer.
Oh, really?
But I kind
huh.
of oversaw the production of the book, yeah.
Good for you. Well, what's interesting is how you promoted this, of course, picking people up in the middle of the Cleveland Mall in front of the convention center is how you found me. What are some of the other ways that you have promoted this book?
Yeah, yeah, I've learned way more about marketing, promotion, and the book business than I had anticipated. I've promoted it through my own column in Boston, through various community organizations. I did a reading that was sponsored by one of the gay Jewish organizations here in Boston. I've done the show several times at a Unitarian church where I'm also a member. I've done it through other progressive churches and synagogues in other cities, and various gay groups. I've also done it, I'm trying to think, you know, the gay games. I was part of a fundraiser that took place the year before the games, and I met the person who was kind of in charge of cultural events, and he saw me do a couple pieces from the show and really liked it, so he helped me get connected with a venue in Cleveland. And then the fringe festivals, I just kind of applied like anybody else, and I'm looking at potentially doing a couple fringe festivals next year. Some of them are on a lottery basis, so you never know if you're going to get in. Orlando has a large one that I've been thinking about.
That's correct.
But yeah, you know, I've tried a variety of different approaches, and it seems like you have to do a little bit of everything.
You know, I talked to you a little bit before the show. We've chatted before as listeners. We met kind of by accident months ago in Cleveland. What you sometimes get up to 100 people to show, sometimes a very small group. What's the make, old, young, male, female? Tell me about that, of your shows.
You know, it's interesting because I would say the majority of the time I've done the show, it is... They're probably, you know, I've had a lot of gay people, but I would say in general, the majority of people who've seen my show probably have been straight. But it's a mix of men and women. I would say mostly, you know, over 40, because the show does deal with getting older. But I did the show at Boston's youth hostel, and there were some people there in their 20s. And I got a really good response from them because they were like, well, a lot of this is about identity, and, you know, they can relate to the whole thing about trying to find your place in life. So, you know, I've done readings and I've the show at several colleges, and would actually like to do more of that. So it's pretty diverse.
Right. I noticed on your website you either teach a class or have classes in memoir writing. Is that correct?
Yeah, I teach there's a nonprofit writing center in Boston called Grub Street, G-R-U-B, and they're actually now offering some courses online as well as, you know, in person, and I've been teaching there for about 8 years. It's a very well-regarded writing hub here in Boston, and many of the people who take classes there, you know, are really serious about their writing, and so they have some very accomplished writers who teach there. I'm kind of honored to be one of their instructors, and I teach a course called Writing from Real Life, which is basically about how to take, you know, the stuff that happens in our lives and develop, you know, memoir vignettes and personal essays, like how to use some of this difficult material as the grist for writing. And I really love teaching, so I enjoy it. Yeah, it's been fun.
Now, as a gay Jewish man myself, I admit that all of us have been in therapy, right? or I have anyway.
Yeah.
And as my listeners know, I am married to a openly gay psychiatrist who practiced in the gay community at first in Dallas for 25 years. And now only has one patient, me, with no copays. And that's my joke. Anyway, what he did for years and years was have his students do journals. And so what you're doing is for gay people about therapy. Let me give you a little background of this show. We actually are, my demographic is 18-24-year-olds, which has shocked me. Maybe they don't read, but they like to learn about books. And a lot of them fly in and out of a little chat room that I got that Twitter, and I have a Twitter feed also. And a lot of them are writing journals now. Journaling, because because of the, you know, the way that iPads and phones and tablets are happening. People are journaling so much more, whether it's on YouTube. So what would you say to my 18 to 24-year-old LGBT folks out there in Oakville, Idaho? It really is Oakville, Idaho. Yeah.
I would say about writing and about creativity.
Yes, about writing and journaling and their lives.
Yeah, I kept a journal when I was in college, and then I kind of took a break, and then when I was in my 30s, I started, you know, journaling again, and I actually have a cabinet in my apartment that is full of all these journals now over the last 20-some years, and you never know. I mean, I think journaling is a little different than, you know, writing for publication. I certainly wouldn't want to be publishing my journals. There's a lot of repetition. There's a lot of wallowing in the mud. But it can be very useful not only as an outlet, but also if they say, well, gee, maybe down the road they want to write memoir. They want to remember what it was like to be at certain points in their lives. You know, having those journals means that they'll have the source material to go back and really find, you know, really feel like, okay, this is what it was like when I was 24, and you know, and this, and then think about how they've grown and changed, and you know, we also talk about writers having a particular voice or style, and sometimes I think writing in the journal is a good way to kind of experiment and kind of figure out, you know, what is my take on these things in my life, and just explore. So it's great. I mean, the fact that they're reading and writing is a good thing. I would just say keep doing it.
Right.
That's great.
And the web and the blogs are kind of a democratization of publishing right now. You spoke about you learned more about self-publishing and publishing than you wanted to know. That's everywhere. I have interviewed Edmund White. I've interviewed people who write plays. Dan Bukatinsky from Scandal. All these people have been on the show, and they all are saying the same thing. The world changed over the last half decade or decade. The 6 or 8 gay publishing houses are gone. There's maybe 1 or 1.5 left. Editing is a lost art in both straight and gay.
And most of our gay bookstores are gone. We have one in Boston that's hanging on, but so many of the gay bookstores have closed. Yeah,
right.
It's tough.
The one in Philly, ours all closed here. We have one that kind of sells, you know, dildos and has a section, you know. And I think that's what happened to the one in Philly. I think Philly reopened. I think it's a gift store.
Mm-hmm.
We have 90 seconds left in our fastest 30 minutes of life. And we talked a little bit about that. I told you that. So what's next? What's on your plate for next for Judah Lang? What's on your plate now? Next time.
Well, right now I'm in the middle of teaching 2 classes, one for senior citizens at UMass Boston and one in Salem, Mass., which is connected with Grub Street. I'm going to be doing my show for a gay seniors group in Boston in mid-November.
Great.
I'm looking, hopefully, I'm starting to look at some fringe festivals for next year.
Great.
And, you know, I keep tweaking the show and, you know, taking a piece out and putting a new piece in. So, yeah,
good
I'm
for
trying
you.
To kind of keep it moving.
You are a busy guy. This is amazing. I mean, writers have a life, but this seems to be, you know, a real central part of your life, promoting this piece of your life that you're sharing. And thank you so much for sharing with us. We've come to the end.
Thank you for having me.
Judah, oh, you're welcome. JudahLeBlang.com, JudahLeBlang.com. You can get the book on there. And good night. And thank you, Judah. Take care. Good night.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.